What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast number 126, Leading the Way in the Secondary Setting. Actually, I changed the title on all the things that I think I posted, and it's Concussion Protocol and MTBI Research, but it's still number 126. So we're going to be talking about the Concussion Protocol and the MTBI research done there. This is the first time I've done this, is I had a conversation with Dr. Resch beforehand, so I recorded that, kind of edited that or turned it into MP3, and so I hope to play that back here in the podcast so that we can have that conversation so that the guys there at DeSoto can actually hear what he was saying. So hopefully it all works out. If not, again, this is the first time I've done it, and it was a last-minute deal because he was going to have class, so hopefully it works out. But I am your host, Jeremy Jackson. Sitting right beside me, we got
Jose,
Shakira,
Gabby.
We have representing Memorial Hermann, Bubba Wilson, and then
Matthew.
And some of our other students are doing the other jobs. Bernice is over there on Ustream. Bob's over there on Twitter. And then, of course, we're having some sort of technical difficulties and my tablets won't turn on, so I can't be typing in the show notes. But we're going to make it work. SportsMedicineBroadcast.com. If you want to check out the website, SportsMedicineBroadcast.com, that has the links to all that stuff we just said and where we broadcast live almost every single Wednesday. So without much further ado, Matthew.
Please tell us about yourself. Let's start with Mr. Young.
How's it going? My name is David Young. I'm one of the athletic trainers here over at DeSoto High School. This is my 12th year in the profession. I've been at DeSoto for 5 years. I also spent 5 years at Cedar Hill, 1 year at Beaumont Central High School, and 1 year over at Red Oak High School. I also did my undergrad over at the University of Texas at Arlington. Graduated from Westbrook High School and working here with my lovely wife, Corey Young, as well as Kyle Tribble and Evan Moore.
Hi, I'm Corey Young. I went to the University of Indianapolis in Indianapolis, Indiana. That's where I did my undergraduate degree, and I've been at DeSoto for 11 years.
I'm Kyle Tribble. I've been in the profession for 12 years now. I've been at DeSoto for 8, and I spent 4 years at Huntsville ISD. As well. I'm also a graduate of the University of Texas at Arlington, and that's about it.
I'm Evan Wilno. I went to Tarleton State University. It's 4 years in the profession. I did 2 years of contract work, and this is my second year here at DeSoto.
Tell us about what you're doing over there as far as the concussion management, the research with Dr. Resch, and those kind of things.
Well, it started when Scott Galloway was here. He was the head athletic trainer for about 14 years. And then when I took over, we just continued the relationship with Dr. Resch and then ponied up with Dr. Reniker over at UTD and UT Southwestern for a longitudinal study on MTBIs. And what normally happened, we would have an athlete that would get diagnosed with a concussion and have to go over to UTA, where Dr. Resch would then do a cognitive test as well as the balance test on a neurocon with this particular study, just to see the differences baseline during while the athlete was symptomatic and then while or when that athlete was asymptomatic, to see the differences in the data that was presented. So we kept with that study once he moved and went to the University of Virginia. And Dr. Reniker helped us out, and UT Southwestern purchased us a Vertec foot plate. And so now we're able to cognitively test our athletes as well as balance test our athletes. We'll start the balance baselines here this spring. So as a relationship is just has been built up, we've been able to not only do the balance testing, but implement some other studies when it comes to testing kids, their pupils, and also testing rotationary force with our accelerometer chips.
So you guys are incorporating balance testing pre-injury, post-injury into your protocol?
Correct.
How has that gone over with coaches who are not apt to embrace change?
Well, I'd say honestly, they understand that what we're doing is for the betterment of the athlete. And I think the response is always going to have a good and a bad to it. But for the most part, I think they understand that what we're doing is trying to improve the quality of care for the athlete. And I think a lot of them actually embrace the idea that we're going above and beyond to do things that are going to give these kids a better chance for return to play without reoccurrence. So
right. Now, so the impact test, no, y'all don't use impact, but cognitive testing is tied in with your balance testing. And so they, in essence, have to pass both of those to begin their return to play progression, or how do y'all handle that aspect of it?
Yes, sir. Well, I'll just start over. So we diagnose, say it's football season. Okay. We'll have an athlete and we diagnose them as having signs and symptoms of concussion. Okay. So the first thing we're going to do is we have a pocket scat that's on each one of our phones to where we can go ahead and see what symptoms they're having and have that documented right then. We'll then get them in the training room, give the parents a call, and kind of go over what's about to happen. We will also give them a sheet that has our guidelines on what to look for once they get home. We'll get their schedule, the athlete's schedule, and we'll send out an email to the coaches, the counselors, their teachers, and assistant principals on them possibly having a concussion, the things that they need to look out for when they're in the classroom setting. And then we also give them some guidelines and
we give them a list of academic accommodations.
You know, just to help them out with the recovery process. We try and tell the parent that they need to take up their cell phones, try and tell the parent about high action movies, anything that's going to send a lot of stimulus to the brain we want to shy away from.
So once we do that and get everything situated with the parent, they know what's going on, they will come in and they'll do their post-injury concussion vital signs test on the computer, as well as the balance test on the Virtek plate. That is initially. Then each day they'll come in, they'll fill out a SCAT card letting us know their symptoms. Once they're 24 hours free of any symptoms, we'll go ahead and retest them on the balance as well as on the concussion vital signs so that we can have that quantitative data to compare to their initial baseline and their initial balance test to make sure that they're fully healed and not just telling us they're not having any symptoms.
Okay. Because I've had some of the similar thoughts of what y'all are doing with some stuff we've looked at trying to do. And so I'm just going to pick your brain a little bit off of this. So let's just say those all look good and they're allowed to begin their return to play. Once they do their return to play progression, do y'all do any further testing, or as long as they don't have problems, they're good?
As long as they don't have problems, then they're good. Typically, with all the information that we've done and been given, they're very, very completely healed to go back. Now, we tell them, hey, if there is an issue and there is something, you know, definitely come back and let us know. Or if a coach would notice something, hey, come back and let us know. Otherwise, mainly they're good to go at that point. Once they receive the physician's clearance and then complete our 5-day, you know, asymptomatic concussion return to play protocol.
Right. Have you had the instance where, say, their cognitive testing is good, but their balance is still lacking? How do you handle that?
Well, you go off of you have to look at their baseline results and have a good idea of how close they are to being to the point where they're not having as many issues, or it's not an issue as much as you think. That helps out a lot, and that's where it really has been nice to be able to get the baseline test on the balance before they're going out. We have been able to get a lot of that for a lot of the sports now, but generally we like the results to be in the right parameters before they have any return. So,
and those parameters and that data is actually looked over by a neuropsychologist as well.
Okay.
So Dr. Monroe Cullum, that data will get emailed to our team orthopedic. It'll also get emailed to our neuropsychologist as well as Dr. Resch.
Okay.
To review, and then once he's happy with that, then what'll happen is that data, he'll email me, and we'll get the team doctor to set up an appointment to go to get cleared by the physician.
All right.
You guys all right over there? I like there's some
screen. That's a lot of snow day fun.
Okay. So I'm going to try this again real quick and see if I got it to work. All right. So in after about 10, 15 seconds, if you guys don't hear anything at all, then wave your hand and then I'll or just speak up. But I'm going to try it again and see if it works.
Re-injury and Sport Concussion Institute.
Okay. So tell us, how do you connect? All right. So joining us here, we have Dr. Jacob Resch. This conversation was recorded previously in the show. Can you guys hear that?
Yes, we can hear it.
All right. Good. He has to go teach. So, Dr. Resch, I'm saying that correctly?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right. So, Dr. Resch, will you please tell us about yourself quickly, and then we'll talk about your research.
Yeah. So, I graduated from the University of Georgia in 2010. After that, I spent 4 years at the University of Texas at Arlington, where I specifically addressed concussion in both young and adult athletes. And since that time, I've now moved to the University of Virginia, where I'm an assistant professor and affiliated faculty with the Brain Injury and Sport Concussion Institute.
Okay. So tell us, how did you get connected with David?
It was actually through the former sports medicine director at DeSoto High School, Scott Galloway, that really took a chance and allowed us to look at his athletes or DeSoto High School's athletes in terms of sport-related concussion. Upon Scott's leaving DeSoto High School to assume take another position, David is now the sports medicine director, and he really has been a wonderful ally in conducting this line of research.
All right, so why don't you talk more, a little bit more about that research?
Okay, so the initial study idea was to conduct a longitudinal, multidimensional, and interdisciplinary study in collaboration with the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center and Texas Health Resources, specifically the Ben Hogan Sports Medicine Center. And the idea was, let's look at neurocognitive motor balance measures, as well as self-reported symptoms, in addition to a medical history. And let's track these athletes over a long period of time. So not just do one season or two seasons, but continue the study, continue to collect data to see if changes occur following sport concussion. But also to look at natural maturation using these measures that we commonly use in athletic training. So initially we used the impact as a computerized neurocognitive measure. Then we switched to concussion vital signs while another school used the impact. And then we used the sensory organization test, a sophisticated measure of balance. And then finally a self-reported symptom inventory, taking into account both severity and duration of symptoms that athletes experience prior to and then throughout the recovery after being diagnosed with a sport concussion.
All right, so how common is this level of research in a high school setting?
I think it's emerging, and I think that's really a wonderful sign of our profession, because part of a profession is increased scholarship amongst its membership. And with that said, high school athletic trainers are a unique advantage to a specific population. And in fact, that population is an excellent sample to study not only sport concussion, but musculoskeletal injury and so on. And I think that for concussion specifically, the models, the SLAM model, the sports as a laboratory model, where athletes are studied within their own environment, being the playing field, really lends itself to the athlete trainer's participation in really high quality level research, such as DeSoto High School's athletic trainers have participated in, and even smaller schools, like the other school that was involved with this study was Pentico Christian Academy, which was our smaller school of around 200 athletes, where David and his staff manage around 2,300 athletes.
All right. So talk about some of the results that you've seen from all this research that you've been joining with David Young there at DeSoto.
Okay. So we're still analyzing the results from our larger database. If you take into account that we had roughly 2,600 participants, and out of those 2,600 participants, we've had approximately 200 concussions. And we have 4 years of data. It takes a little while to make sure that data is entered correctly, make sure it's clean, so we're not having any errors that are associated with our data entry. So probably in the next month or so, we're going to sit down with our research team again. That would be with UT Southwestern and Texas Health Resources, Ben Hogan Sports Medicine Center, to say, what studies do we want to start addressing? Because the first and foremost question we want to take a look at is, for those that have been diagnosed with a concussion as they've aged, how do they compare in terms of the computerized testing, the balance testing, compared to individuals that have not had a concussion? And then there are other issues that exist with this form of testing, such as how does maturation affect performance? So we're doing research with both the individuals that had a concussion, but also those individuals that were healthy throughout the four-year period.
All right, so I may have missed it earlier, but how long is the, you said you're going to do it over time. So how long is the time period or the time frame that y'all are doing the research?
So we actually concluded the longitudinal study in 2014 with my departure from UT Arlington. So that database is actually capped. So we have several other studies that are, David's assisting us with. But for the longitudinal study that we're very excited about the results that David and his staff, as well as the staff at Antigo Christian Academy, were pivotal in performing. That data is a four-year database. So basically the entry of an eighth grader into high school following their until their graduation.
So eighth grader to graduation. All right. So we kind of skipped over the actual process. I know David, I'm sure he'll talk about it some in the podcast, but can you talk about the process? He said they're one of the only schools using a like a computerized balanced scoring system. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so one of the tools that we have at a university or in a clinic level is the NeuroCom Smart Balance Master. And the Smart Balance Master is valued somewhere around $100,000. So it's considered the gold standard of the balance assessment, and it's just not available to all clinicians. It's a great tool, but it's neither time nor cost effective. So we actually had two of those units at the University of Texas at Arlington, and we were able to provide that instrumentation to help assess athletes following the injury, following a concussion for DeSoto and Pintigo Christian Academy. So we were able to add another tool to DeSoto's toolbox and concussion management. In addition to that, computerized testing in the form of impact and then concussion vital signs, it's very prevalent at all levels of sport, high school, collegiate, professional. We assisted in the administration of that form of testing, and then again, assessed symptoms and a medical history. So what would happen is David and his staff, as well as the research team faculty, would assist with baseline testing. In the event of a injury that would occur, the individual would return to our laboratory at UT Arlington within 72 hours. And really, that was to facilitate a parent bringing the athlete to the University of Texas Arlington, since it was a drive about 20 to 25 minutes. We'd reassess them using every test, so the sensory organization test for balance, impact or concussion vital signs and symptoms. And then David and his staff would track those individuals in terms of symptoms until the athlete reported symptom-free when they returned to our laboratory, and we captured that final data point. And with that final data point, we did not interpret the data per se, but we did allow David and his medical team an ability to look at that data and use what they would normally use it for their clinical interpretation. In addition, we had a neuropsychologist assist us with an interpretation that would more difficult cases.
All right, so I'm definitely not an expert, but it sounds to me like there was a lot going on. You said you use the balancing, you use impact testing, you use all the functional testing. So what do you see as the end result of this?
So the end result, basically, to look at the tools that people are using currently to manage sport concussion. And I think one of the overriding factors about this is looking at these instruments and determining their value in assessing young athletes as they mature, but also looking at them post-injury to determine the clinical value of each of these tools. And really to reinforce, and maybe we won't reinforce, it depends on our data and what it says, that a multidimensional approach is advocated for concussion management. And that's one of the unique things about this study is I feel that going into this study, all research members were unbiased, and I believe that David and his staff were unbiased towards the instruments that are being used to really look at the data and say, what is it telling us? What is the appropriate timing of administration of these tests? Does this test value, or does the test value change with the 12-year-old versus a 14-year-old versus a 16-year-old versus 18-year-old? Those are the things that I think are going to be coming from the study. And, as I mentioned right away, one of the major purposes of this study was to determine, is there a cumulative effect of concussion in young athletes as they develop compared to individuals that don't have a concussion? Please keep in mind that these are still, although very expensive measures, are gross measures of neurocognitive performance, balance performance, and symptoms that would only add to the body literature addressing this major issue right now in organized sport. for those in middle school, high school, club sports, professional sports, and collegiate sports.
All right. So given what you've done so far and the people you've worked with there, do you have any recommendations as far as concussion testing for, I guess, realistically, the high school? Because, you know, we're not going to get a $100,000 machine here to do balance testing. So what are your recommendations there?
Absolutely. I actually just did a webinar yesterday, and that was a very reoccurring question. And what I'd recommend is the athlete trainer, as we shift as a profession to evidence-based practice. And evidence-based practice simply is not only looking at research, but it's also taking the clinical expertise that we all possess and combining it with the best research evidence to say, hey, yes, that does apply to what we're doing, or no, it does not. And at this time, a multidimensional approach has been advocated since 1997, and it's still advocated, which includes some form of balance assessment that's evidence-based. So as of right now, the most evidence would be behind the balance error scoring system, as well as a sensory organization test in order to assess concussed athletes, or baseline test concussed athletes. For the computerized neurocognitive test, I'm working on publishing a study right now that shows there's really not too much difference between the computerized neurocognitive tests that are available for the athlete trainer to use. It's personal preference, but also, again, you have to look at the environment and say, what can we facilitate here well? And it's also understanding the caveats of the test, saying that, well, we are now using impact, ANAM, concussion vital signs, axon sport. That's great, but can we make sure the environment's controlled, that we're not assessing 30 to 50 to 100 athletes at one time? Rather, we're trying to keep the ratio of how many athlete trainers are observing the test to the number of athletes being tested relatively low. What's been recommended in the literature for computerized neurocognitive testing has been 1 to 5 to 1 to 10. So one proctor to 5 to 10 athletes in order to reduce invalid tests, and to make sure the athletes aren't distracted while taking the tests. Additionally, for the balance assessment, as I mentioned, the best in the SOT, the balance error scoring system, and sensory organization test have the most evidence behind them. And I would encourage, if you're using the best, do what you can in order to make sure you're getting the best score. So the best takes approximately 4 minutes to administer, maybe a little bit less if you're more familiar with the instrument. But at the same time, what we know is there's a practice effect with the test. So I would encourage one administration followed by administration of the test again, which would lengthen the test administration to 8 minutes. But you're going to reduce any error associated with practice effects or the individuals getting better at taking the test. And then for self-reported symptoms are still a strong indicator of the presence or absence of the injury. But it's a matter of adopting a scale that you feel comfortable with. The SCAT-3, the SCAT-2, the SCAT all have their scales, which are absolutely fine to use. But there are over 20 scales that are available that the athlete trainer can adopt that range from, I believe, 9 items all the way to 25 items that either rank a symptom on severity, or what I recommend, severity and duration, as a good scale to use to assess an individual throughout the recovery from the injury. So at this time, it's a multidimensional approach. So if I was at a high school of 200 athletes, I could assess those 200 athletes using the SCAT-3, using the balance error scoring system and a symptom scale independent of the SCAT-3 for a relatively inexpensive amount. That amount, of course, is tied to the number of athletes you're assessing, not only in terms of cost, but the number of people to administer the test. But at a moderate level, there are computerized versions of the balance error scoring system that look at sway velocity. Those instruments have recently had evidence of reliability produced about them that say, okay, great, but we still need to look at evidence of validity. But adding that to a computerized neurocognitive test, such as impact or concussion vital signs, ANAM, axon sport, would be great, along with a symptom checklist. And last, the most expensive model would be the computerized neurocognitive test, in addition to a sophisticated balance unit like the Neurocom Smart Balance Master or the Vertec Dynamic System, which are in the range of about $100,000. And then lastly, symptom checklist. The other piece of this, and this is what I encourage all athletic trainers to do, is to reach out to your local neuropsychologist. And I say local because the neuropsychologist can be reached through the internet. As long as the relationship is built and you're able to encrypt a PDF, there's no reason why a neuropsychologist can't provide their expertise via looking at an encrypted impact file, concussion file, signs file, so on. And I think that neuropsychologists, especially those sport neuropsychologists, are underused, especially when looking at prolonged or difficult cases, prolonged recoveries or difficult cases. There is a particular society that came into existence a few years ago called the Sport Neuropsychologist Society. And you can actually look for a psychologist that met the criteria to be part of the society, which is very rigorous, to contact them via email, set up a phone interview or a face-to-face interview with them and say, what would it do to have you be part of our concussion management team? And you, as the athlete trainer, make the call. Say, do you want every report to be looked at by the athlete, the neuropsychologist, or do you just want those individuals that have prolonged recoveries? And it's a conversation you and that particular neuropsychologist would have. In Texas, Monroe Cullum, Mark Barisa, Summer Ott, they're all wonderful neuropsychologists that are part of the system. And I think it's important to stress it's not just a multidimensional or multi-test approach to concussion management. It's a interdisciplinary approach as well.
Yeah, Dr. Summer Ott, she's been on the podcast a couple of times. She's with Memorial Hermann, who is our district sponsor, or they sponsor our district's sports medicine stuff. And so we have a really good relationship with Dr. Ott. So yeah, I you know, that's how we, where we send most of our stuff. So you said you had about 15 minutes and it's been about 20. Are you running late already?
I have about 10 more minutes.
Okay. So kind of to make sure I understood, what you're saying is use the BEST, which is part of the SCAT-3, right? The balance error scoring system. We use impact here because, again, Memorial Hermann pays for those impact tests for us. So relatively, the computer-generated tests are similar. And from there, you said we need to control the ratio, because right now what happens is usually the other athletic trainer here will take about 20 or 30 kids to the computer lab. He'll administer the test, maybe with one of our students there to kind of help answer questions or troubleshoot. And then you're saying do the best beforehand as well as afterwards. Is that what I was understanding?
So no, actually, when you're doing the pre-injury assessment, you would do your computerized neurocognitive test. You do your balance assessment, whatever that may be, the best or otherwise. And then post-injury, you administer the same test, and again, when the athlete's symptom-free. So when you're doing to address your question about the ratio of proctors to individuals completing the computerized neurocognitive test, athlete trainers have a lot of athletes to baseline tests. So if you can control that ratio, wonderful. But I also realize that human resources are also limited. So if you are able to test normally 30 athletes and we're able to cut that in half to 15 and make sure there's a space between every athlete at every computer. So you have a large gap, so you're minimizing distractions. That might be one potential solution that's not ideal, but what also is not ideal that is if you have a large number of invalid tests and you have to retest, say 50 athletes, 81 athletes, depending on the number of athletes that you have at your school. So the more you control that initial environment, the better results you're going to get. The other thing that I encourage individuals to look at is the conclusion of the computerized neurocognitive test. You get your printed baseline report. One issue that I published on is the valid but invalid tests. All tests have invalidity criteria, criteria that an athlete may underperform that the test will pick up on. Now, what we've recently shown is that those tests that appear to be valid might be invalid. So an individual that would have an invalid test would appear to have a valid test based on the criteria set forth by the test manufacturer. So if you pull up the individual's PDF or every individual that you baseline test, their PDF, and they score below a certain percentile compared to normative values, whether that be the 16th percentile, 25th percentile, that'll also be an indicator of the validity of the test that would encourage athletic trainers to not only rely on the invalidity criteria that's built into the program or automated within the program, but take the time to look at individual files to say, should we reassess this athlete or not, depending on the values that they achieved on that particular test.
All right. So then now moving on from here, where are you going forward? Like, what is the next step for you? What is the next thing you're working on?
So I think the base of my research has looked at the measurement properties of computerized neurocognitive tests, but also balance measures in terms of adult and young athletes. And what I'm looking at right now is establishing those values to assist athlete trainers in making evidence-based decisions on what tests they would consider incorporating into their concussion management protocol, but also just realize the limitations of the tests that they've already chosen and to complement those with different tests. And I think that a product of my current research protocol or research studies is allowing athletic trainers to ask the right questions when incorporating various new measures that are available for concussion management and asking the right questions. So when we go to the NATA's annual clinical symposia and AT Expo to ask, okay, before I purchase this product for my school, what's the evidence of reliability? What's the evidence of validity? And if there is no evidence or if it's not published, I would encourage that athletic trainer to say, we're going to hold off on making this purchase until we see evidence to support its use in our concussion management protocol. I would say if I've achieved this thus far with my research, I think I'm hopefully helping our profession and assisting athletic trainers in better caring for athletes. Now, where we're going from here is the computerized neurocognitive tests, the balance measures that are out there, the symptom measures, they're the best of what we have right now. And I think that's important to understand, especially when looking at a multidimensional approach to concussion management. I think the next steps are looking at novel ways to assess the injury in order to benefit not only the athlete to get closer to a gold standard to assess concussion, but also to help our athletic training colleagues to make a more cost and time effective measure so athletic trainers can focus on the other injuries that they have to worry about, the ACL tears, the shoulder, the rotator cuff tears, the chronic injuries. Because as you well know, Jeremy, concussion is just one of the injuries that we're dealing with that gains a lot of attention, but it's not to minimize everything else that we do in our profession. So to come up with a time and cost effective measure, a biomarker, or a way to combine the motor and cognitive tasks, that's where we would like to go with our line of research and to better understand the current measures that exist in both young and adult athletes.
All right, very cool. So where can someone find out more about you or the work you're doing?
If you look at the University of Virginia website and you simply search for my name, so Jake Resch, R-E-S-C-H, my email address is jer6x@virginia.edu. That's jer6x@virginia.edu. I'm more than happy to address questions that people may have or assist them in helping develop an evidence-based concussion management protocol. But that said, I'm really proud to be an athletic trainer at this particular point in time, because a lot of our colleagues that are out there are doing a wonderful job at tackling a very difficult injury, and that's concussion, and doing the best of what they have. And as a researcher, I think it's my responsibility to assist our clinicians in order to make caring for these athletes more feasible and improving the care of the athlete while helping our profession overall.
All right, very cool. Well, Dr. Resch, thanks for joining us, and hoping this soundbite is able to be played into the regular podcast. If not, then I'll put it in whenever I release the audio-only version. So I hope you enjoy your class, and again, thanks for taking time to speak with us.
All right, thank you very much, Jeremy. Let me know I can help in the future.
All right. Almost started playing whatever song was on the next playlist. I don't know what it would have been. I think. Anyways, all right, so that was our conversation with Dr. Resch earlier. And now let's see what, I think Bubba was taking notes there, questions and comments he had.
I was actually taking notes at one point on my phone.
But I figured that because I could see you were nodding and like mouthing yes and, and this. I could figure that. So, Bubba, why don't you go ahead and throw out some of your questions, right, and then at any point you guys can interject.
So for my colleagues to the north who are playing in the snow today, I applaud what y'all are doing. It seems like you've got a very supportive administration, and from our previous talk before and a supportive coaching staff. But let me just ask a couple questions that go along with that. Was there any pushback from the parents when their athletes had to go over to UTA for further workup?
Yes, there's always that happened probably. Out of 10 times, that probably happened one or two times, depending on what time slot we had available to get them over to Arlington, which Dr. Resch was saying is about a 25-minute drive, really not too bad because traffic usually wasn't heavy at that point. But for the most part, we were really, we did a really good job, I believe, of communicating with the parent on what we were trying to establish and what we were trying to do with their child to put them in the best situation once they went back into their specific sport, which once you kind of explain and were able to sit the parent down with the athlete and explain to them exactly what was going to happen, like I said, maybe one or two parents out of 10 would actually have some sort of pushback on, them going through the actual protocol.
Right. Okay, so to stay on my pushback theme for a second,
yes.
In what I wrote, I did something similar to what y'all do about with teachers, and this is something that we're looking at and working on right now, kind of a return to learn aspect. How much issue/pushback did you have, were there with teachers, and I don't know how much you got involved with this, but with teachers as far as trying to accommodate these athletes academically before they could get over and get evaluated and have further information given back to the teachers?
You know, I think in the past that we've had a really good response from the teachers. They, they care about the academics of the athlete or the general student. So, I mean, in most cases, I think it's really given a warranted welcome, and I think they really appreciate the fact that we're thinking about them, not just the coach's aspect, but the teacher's aspect of doing with that athlete and giving them the ideas and what to do, what to look for, things to evaluate, and how to make decisions on how to deal with that person.
Okay. Not that it makes a difference to me. It's more curiosity than anything. Why did y'all switch from impact to the concussion vital signs?
Cost.
Okay. Easy enough. how long does it take you there to perform your balance test?
Relatively quick. I think 4 minutes. Yeah, 4 to 6 minutes tops. We have an individual who comes out and does that for us. It's a member of the staff that is working on the research project. And he's able to take care of that pretty quickly. So,
and are you all testing all of your athletes with that?
This year, we just picked specific sports that we were able to get before their season started. So we didn't get all of the sports done, but we did get a handful, soccer, softball, women's basketball. I know we did the initial balance baseline with them, but we were not able this year just getting the plate to get everyone done. So hopefully that's the expectation, or what's going to happen for next year is to be able to get everyone done.
Now, are y'all going to... with this, and this was a question I had with Dr. Resch when he was talking about it. Are with this study, are you impact or cognitively testing them ninth grade only, or are you going to test them annually, every other year? How does that work for not only cognitive but actually the balance as well?
Well, we do our concussion vital sign testing. We do it from the seventh grade on, and we do it annually at the beginning of every year. It's part of our physical packet. Everybody has to turn their physical in. And then also before they're allowed to play sports, they have to take their concussion vital signs test as part of that program.
Okay. What about on the balance side? What are y'all going to do there?
That'll start this year. We actually just got the Burtec in. When we were doing the longitudinal study with Dr. Resch, they wouldn't do the balance aspect until they had suffered and were presented with symptoms.
Okay.
So what would happen is, once we went over the protocol and they were assessed, then in that 3-day window, 72-hour window, then they would get over to UTA to get inside the neurocom.
To get that done. Okay. Is the plan to annually test for balance as well?
I'm sorry, yes. Say that again.
Is your plan moving forward is to test all athletes annually on balance as well as the cognitive then?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. Some bigger plans that are going on. We're actually trying to remodel an old weight room that we have in one of our field houses and actually make that into a lab to where we're able to do our cognitive and baseline testing and kind of storage, if you will, with the accelerometers and our pupilometers and everything that we're getting that we need to hold on to that's quite expensive, to make an actual brain performance lab or injury lab, if you will. That way they'll have, we're looking at trying to put about 45 computers in there. We're actually looking at trying to have a room specifically designed to have the foot plates in that area and have an office for our grad assistant who's helping out with facilitating that protocol.
Okay, that's cool.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, obviously, if you've seen any of the pictures of your facility and all this, you know your administration is supportive and proactive. So that's a good thing that they're going to potentially allow you to have that as well.
Yeah. I mean, with the the biggest thing with DeSoto from an administrative type standpoint, I think they've seen some catastrophic type injuries and what can happen from the legality, and it all comes down to money. So when it comes down to it, they rather spend, you know, $20,000 to $100,000 as opposed to 1 point whatever million.
Right. Right.
Being proactive.
Yeah, be proactive versus reactive. So
exactly.
I think that covered all my questions I had off listening to him talk. So Jeremy's over here playing with something. So I guess what do y'all have to say?
Well, I would just say that, like Dr. Resch talked about, having a multiple disciplinary approach to taking care of these concussions, I think the more tools you have at your hands to make a decision, the better. And I think that's something that we're seeing. We're continuing to see better results from our players who are returning to activity and less incidents of reoccurrence. So I think it's really been good for that standpoint.
Yeah, and from another standpoint, my biggest concern when I first started off as an athletic trainer, and really something that concerns me today, is when an athlete presents itself as a concussion or a head trauma, what was too soon to put that athlete back in? And for the 4 years that we've been doing these studies and had this protocol in place, we haven't had one student that came back, or one athlete that has come back and said, you know, I think I came back too early. I'm still showing some signs, you know, signs or symptoms that have come back. I mean, once they go through the whole protocol and they go back, we haven't had one kid to come back and say, you know what, I came back too soon.
Right. And I think that goes hand in hand a little bit. If you look at ACL rehab, we need to make sure those go back at the right time. And yes. I mean, how many of them have we had that have gone out there and gotten in drills and they're not ready? They're in the way. And they have to get out of the way so everybody else can keep going. And this is just, you know, I'm much older than all of y'all. And how we handle it when I first got as we won't even talk about on the air, you know, to what we do now. And I think, you know, change is good.
Right, definitely so.
You know, and with that being said, though, change is good medically. We've gotten better. If we go at it just for a second, ACLs used to never come back. Then they came back in 2 years. And then they came back in a year. And now it's under a year, you know, and I think, the argument with coaches is if we can't change medically, then those guys get to give up huddle. They got to go back to reel-to-reel film to watch on the weekends, you know, and some of the things they do football-wise or basketball-wise or whatever didn't exist back in the day. And so we've got to keep advancing.
Well, you become stagnant if you don't continue to improve how you're doing things. So
right.
That definitely is something about a profession that I think is really beneficial. So,
no, without a doubt.
All right, so what other reactions or responses do you guys have to the conversation with Dr. Resch? Did y'all take notes like Bubba did?
No, but I think it was a great point that he stated about trying to find a neuropsychologist to work with. Dr. Cullum has just been a godsend for ourselves. I mean, he's able to kind of go over that data that would just be basically pig Latin for me, just looking at some of the graphs and everything else, and to really just put in the focus, okay, I think this kid is going to be okay, and no, we need to hold off on this kid. And I know that our team orthopedic has taken a great liking to Dr. Cullum because that kind of sets his mind at ease, because when we first said that we were going to start this, we had a tough time finding a doctor that would actually even sign off on return to play protocol.
Yeah, I think the other, probably where the neuropsychologist is underutilized, is on these prolonged recoveries. I think some of the doctors sit on them too long before they refer them, and that's where they're good at accommodations and some of these other things that maybe, hey, if we can jump on this a little quicker, we're not dealing with this as long as some of these others. And sometimes you've just got bad luck, in my opinion. You're going to be out a while and struggle, and that's unfortunate. But, you know, the education comes from many angles to many people, and it's educating, as we all know in this profession, certain other physicians to understand what we're dealing with on a daily basis and what's the best way to move forward with that individual.
It definitely helps to have individuals with the right training and physicians that aren't using have never really looked at their, you know, beliefs on concussions and their return to play. They're still doing some of the same old things and not growing in the, you're not growing as far as you know, how they test, what they look at, so on and so forth. So,
well, right, we're 4 years into a law that, you know, still there's people that say, well, you didn't lose consciousness, you don't have a concussion. So yeah. we're always going to have that, but hopefully it becomes a smaller and smaller group every year. But, you know, there's no right answer. I know that for sure.
Oh, and that definitely makes having all the tools that, you know, when there's not a right answer, it's great to have a lot of different ways to look at it and be able to make a decision. So.
Right, right. Everything we have in front of us is showing us this versus, well, we're going to flip a coin.
Yep.
All right. So talk quickly. DeSoto High School, is it the only school, the only high school in DeSoto ISD?
Yes. Yes, sir.
All right. So how do you think this would transfer to a school district that has multiple schools? Because I'm sure, you know, the Dallas, there's a, I think Dallas ISD is really big, like HISD is, right?
Correct.
How have you guys kind of worked with them, or have they worked with you at all, with the people just immediately surrounding you as far as, you know, like I said at the beginning, it was leading the way. How have you guys helped them out?
You know, I don't know that it's so much as helping out. A lot of times in our profession, people think that, hey, we're just too busy, we're doing all of these other things. And the fact that we've taken the time to do these studies and things, you know, no one that I've seen has came to us and said, hey, you know, why are you guys doing what you're doing? What results are you getting? And I don't know if that's because they think we're too busy or they're too busy, but it really hasn't been the case that people have been coming to us. That's what we would like. And hopefully this broadcast will get a little bit more, I don't want to say recognition out there, but to use us as an asset to other athletic trainers and let them know that, hey, you know, we want to talk to people and we want to tell them what we're doing and the results that we've had. So hopefully this will, you know, enable the people to see that we're open to that.
All right. So actually, that was kind of brought out because one of the people that's listening in the chat room commented, she's from Tennessee. She said they just got an initial bill passed that went into effect January 1st, 2014. And so, you know, they're a little bit slower. You know, Texas is, like Bubba said, what, 4 or 5 years into this concussion law. And, you know, I know that we're kind of at the forefront because as far as athletic trainers, we're at the forefront and all this other stuff. And so, I'm not wrapping it up right now, but just so that Katie there knows, how can she contact you guys to find out more about what you guys got or get some of the results you guys have?
Well, our email or my email is, excuse me, david.young@desotoisd.org.
Yes, and you can also look on the desotoisd.org website, and the links have the sports medicine, and you can go to us and find each one of our individual emails on that. Also, you can call the athletic training room at 972-274-8289, and there's different extensions, but just to get the word out that, hey, contact us. We'd love to be an asset to you and get that word out. But I'd say desotoisd.org website is going to be the easiest way to find our individual emails and get in touch with us.
All right. So, Katie, I hope that helps you out. And anybody listening anywhere other than Texas, hopefully that helps you. Of course, or I guess we're not going to mention California. So, you guys have any other reactions or any other thoughts? Because, I mean, we covered a lot with Dr. Resch. Bubba had a lot of good questions about the procedures.
We were going to show you guys some of the equipment that we were working with. We don't use this in our protocol. This is kind of just to help get the data. Once we do have somebody that presents with concussion signs or symptoms. So he was talking about the accelerometer. What it is basically we had these headbands donated from Nike. Can you guys see that?
Yeah, well enough. I mean, it's a little okay. Fuzzy, but we're good.
Okay. And so what happens is the TI instruments came in and they made a little pocket on the side to where this chip is put on, and we're able to push that in and secure it down. And so the kids will wear that around their head, and then they have this tracking unit right here that's going to be kind of on their back, okay, upper scapula. And then so say they take a hit, then this, it has a light on the end of it that'll blink red, and we're able to scan it with this magnet deal that each one of us has on the sideline. Now, when they were asking us, you know, what can we do to make this better, you know, for any varsity football game and any athletic trainer out there, I don't have time or none of them. We have three on the sideline and we still won't have time to swipe every kid coming on and off to make sure, did you take, you know, was this hit hard enough to where we need to maybe sit and ask you some questions and see what's going on. So the second generation of this, they're actually trying to get to a point where it'll be able to send a text message to our smartphone saying, you know, John Q athlete sustained a hit that totaled, you know, 8 Gs or whatever. And that way we'll know to maybe go and see how he's feeling and ask him a couple of questions.
So on those bands, how do the kids feel about wearing them?
They really don't have a choice. This year was the first year that we used it. It was kind of like, you're going to sign up for this. This is what's going on. This is going to help you out. So on the freshman level and the JV level, all the kids wanted it because it was a Nike headband and they wanted a free Nike headband. So that was the motivation for that. On the varsity level, we kind of, you know, how does this feel? Do you like it? Some of the kids didn't even notice it. A lot of kids that we have were kind of prima donna-ish. And so they were like, I'm not going to wear this. And so I think as time goes on, those freshmen and JV kids that are used to wearing it, they won't even notice it once they are on the varsity. So I expect a lot more of our varsity kids to actually wear this next year in the fall.
So the idea was that you guys would, you know, and when there's a player change, you would swipe them, or is it just like if you guys are watching, you see somebody take a hit, then you would swipe them with that thing, and then it would change colors when you swiped them, or like explain that just a little bit more.
Well, what it does is once we see a player sustain a hit, we can go up with our little chip that you showed you guys that's in our pocket. We'll go up and we'll swipe it. What we'll actually do is it will blink. Was it for every 10 Gs?
Right.
That they took, and so it'll tell you how many G's force that hit actually sustained, which will give you an idea of how hard the kid was hit. You know, one thing we're still working on is, you know, trying to figure out how hard of a hit will, you know, induce a concussion. Because you know, you'll have one kid take an 8 G hit and he's showing signs and symptoms. You'll have another kid take 15 and he's acting perfectly fine. So you know, that's part of the research that we're doing is trying to figure out kind of where that point is for future reference.
Gotcha. And then is this a prototype? Is this something that's available for other people?
No, this is the prototype right now. So Dr. Rob Reniker with UT Southwestern was working with Dr. Resch, and then they came and he saw where we were helping Dr. Resch out with the longitudinal study and asked if we wanted to be a part of this. I said, yes, you know, any way that we could kind of help put our mind at ease with diagnosing and being on that forefront, we want to try and be a part of. So he presented this, and then he also presented the pupillometer. I'm going to show him that. And so we just, you know, he gave me a call. We had a meeting, went over everything, and that's how the relationship started.
I think the hardest thing is figuring out what G-force is bad. I mean, we've all played Nintendo where you had Glass Jaw Joe and, you know, he wasn't too hard to knock out and move forward. And we've got those kids in our programs that, you know, the wind blows and over he goes and something's wrong. And I'm curious to see what those numbers are. A couple of years ago, I was on the periphery of assisting with a study with rodeo athletes, and we put accelerometers in their ears of all the rough stock riders. And you talk about some resistance now. Those guys didn't want to do it, but it was funny. Everybody that did it won money. So after a while, it was pretty easy to get somebody to agree to put it on. And that's been, I think that's been published now, but some of the data on, if you're familiar with the sport, the bareback riders, man, you know, the forces they go through was pretty amazing. I think it shocked almost everybody. And that was, NASA was involved in that one with the accelerometers, but it was pretty interesting there too. But from this standpoint, you know, what's too much? He didn't get hit in the head, but he got whiplash. He, you know, he had X, Y, and Z all add up to a bad event. I'd be curious to what it shows.
Well, and then you also have to look at how they take the hit also. I mean, are they braced for the hit or are they getting blindsided? I mean, it depends on, you know, there's a lot of things that go into making a determination. So
Yeah, it's almost one of those you take the reading and hope you have game film or something on it to be able to look at some of that later.
Right. So on this, I want to say contraption, on the tablet, you can double click.
You have to put it a lot closer to the camera if you want us to see it.
And so what'll happen? Go ahead.
So what happens? You'll open up the system. The kids will go through and they'll find their name. We're just going to go down here. We're going to go to guest. Each kid has their own individual pin, just kind of a safety measure that we use to help keep all the kids' information going. So we'll just guest as that. So what we'll go through is they'll open up and they'll actually answer questions about how much stimulants they had, how much sleep they had, how much caffeine they've had that day, what their stress level is. And then what's it? Oh, yeah, it asked, you know, if they're partaking in any illegal street drugs also. And then so they'll click finished. It'll come up with this. We'll have them rest their elbows on a table so that they're stable and hold up to the eyes. And what we'll do is we'll press play. It'll come through. It'll start here in a second. And basically what it does is it goes through a different series of lights, and it tracks how well the pupils react to the light, how quickly they move. And the whole test takes about 2 to 3 minutes. To go through. And we do this with all our athletes, as many as we can get in that participated in the study before every game. And then if they receive a blow, then we'll actually do it again to see the difference in the change in the eyes, to see how a concussion affects the eyes, which will give us some more data to use in case a kid tries to tell us that, you know, I didn't take a hit, I feel fine, but we have the actual data to say, you know, we still think there might be a problem.
Just another tool to kind of make a decision.
Yeah, the more the better. Is it designed to be done daily, weekly, before every game? Is that how it's ultimately been designed to be utilized? Because that could get a little bit cumbersome too.
Yes, sir. What's happening is they're looking at trying to get the data for the research. So they're trying to get as much data for this particular research study as possible. So if we can do it, they'd like for us to do it every day. Or 2 to 3 times a day, but that just isn't feasible right now. So what normally happens is, this being the first year, we were able to do it on game days and then certain weight room days when football was in session. And now that soccer's going, it's kind of, what was it? They did a baseline. They were able to do a baseline. And then if they come in and present themselves with signs and symptoms of concussion, in going through the protocol, we can have them test then. Now, that doesn't, the research or the data that's collected from the pupilometer or the accelerometer isn't used in our determining if they're going to go back to play. We're still using their cognitive test, their balance test, and Dr. Cullum to analyze that.
So really on the other two, you're assisting in the data collection so they can determine best uses, best practices for that later on. Okay.
Hey, you got any other cool toys?
No, I think that's
snowballs.
Well, we have a cranial Doppler system, but we can't pull that out.
I talked to somebody, they're from MedLogic, the InfraScanner 2000. I don't know if you guys saw that at all.
No.
They basically, instead of getting a CT scan to determine cranial bleeds, you can use this InfraScanner. You can use it on the sidelines. It was developed for the military. And that way you can determine, hey, you know, they need to go to the ER right now, or no, there's no cranial bleed, so we'll continue to treat this as is. So they actually, from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, they came down. That may be something that you guys are interested in, since you got all sorts of other cool toys and, you know, yeah. Maybe I can afterwards get you hooked up with them. And
yeah, if you could send us that link, that would be awesome.
They're making a phone call right now, don't you know?
So why don't we have this? So
yeah.
Actually, I'm not exactly sure what happened. I think the YouTube version has ended, so the live stream has ended. So there's all sorts of technical difficulties today. Maybe it's the snow there in Dallas messing everything up. But it's okay. I had a couple more questions about not so much about the concussion stuff, but about the Athletic Trainers Society and the NTATS there in Dallas, and just some general questions about that. Because you told me you guys had won a championship there. And actually, let me Again, I don't know that the live stream is working, but it says NTATS Student Athletic Trainer Olympic Challenge or Champions. So you said you guys have won that once or twice or something like that. So talk briefly about that.
With NTATS, it is just a continuing education seminar that's put on by the North Texas Athletic Training Society, and it enables our students as well as ourselves as staff to go and network with other athletic trainers, the students to, you know, get to meet other student athletic trainers from different programs around North Texas. We do get the CEUs for that, and it's a great thing that they usually do a dissection lab for our athletic training students, and they think that's really interesting. They may do a little quiz thing. I think you guys have the quiz bowl at GHATS. They'll do some question and answer, things like that. But the thing that we love about it is the Student Trainer Olympics, okay? That's kind of, our kids really love it and really get into it because it's something that they have to perform, that they have to, you know, practice for, that is theirs rather than being on the coattails of a football team or a basketball team. And during that, in the Student Trainer Olympics, there are different, it's a relay and there are different sections. So you guys want to talk about the different sections that you...
the sections go, they start off with taping an ankle. They have to hit certain marks, just like we all teach our kids to do. So they have to hit certain marks. And once they finish the ankle taping, they have to run and tag their partner. The next person will do, it's usually an ace wrap at the thigh. They'll ace wrap. Once they're done with that, it has to stay on. And then they'll go and they'll tag the next person. And it's they do a leg splint with the vacuum splints. They have to put the splint on properly and do 15 pumps. And then this person from the splint will then go to tag the next team. The next team has to take a 10-gallon cooler with a 10-pound weight and run down the court. And then the fastest team wins. And so we've won that 3 times now.
All right. So does that Olympics, does it get changed up? Do the events change or the requirements change?
They haven't changed thus far. I mean, we thought that they would, but we're not sure right now if they're going to change it up a little bit or anything like that. So right now, it's still the speed taping, the splinting, the ace wrap, and then the cool run.
They will, because like the NFL, they don't want a dynasty, so they're going to try to shut them up.
Yeah.
There's also another portion to the student competition. They do a taping for neatness and time. And with that, we've had a student win it a couple years, not the last couple years, but they get a monetary award for that also. And they compete against the other students from different schools. So that's kind of a neat thing. Our kids love to go. Typically, we'll get shirts made for that special occasion and we all wear the same thing. And they just have a really good time. They enjoy it.
All right, so about how many student athletic trainers do you guys have there usually?
Right now, we're sitting at about 34 in our program that are split into two different staffs to where each kid has a day off depending on what staff is working in the fall. In the springtime, we're covering most of the practices, and then our students will cover evening events, be it home or away.
Gotcha.
What about four kids?
Gotcha. What about at the NTATS? How many students do y'all have there?
We take all 34 kids to NTATS.
What about total participation?
There you go.
Wow.
2, 4, 6, 8. About 10 on the relay team.
Okay.
What they do is they practice and, you know, we get the ones that are the quickest at each individual section. And then we put the team together that's going to actually compete from the practices that we have.
All right, so I'm not trying to compare. I'm just trying to see kind of what you guys are. So this year at GHATS, we had 1,100 student athletic trainers there for that one-day event. That's what I was trying to get. Like, what's the total number, the size of y'all's event? Total.
Well, actually, I had those numbers. Yeah, so he's on the board. So I was waiting for him.
Well, we had last year, we had 155 professionals show up for the event. Off the top of my head, I'm trying to remember. I think it was somewhere around 1,500 students at the last year at NTATS. So I mean, it's always a pretty good turnout, you know, with the North Texas area being so big, just like the Houston area. It's a great opportunity for the kids to come out, experience things, and they don't see on a regular basis and get an understanding for why they're doing what they're doing. So it brings pretty good turnout.
Yeah, I like the fact they realize they're not the only one in that boat of having to do what they have to do. Right. Oh, they do that too. Okay, I'll be quiet. So,
yeah, right.
Yeah, we at our GS workshop 2 or 3 years ago, they had something like the Olympics, and the kids got really excited. You know, it was a lot of fun. So I think something like that, it's fun. And I've thought about doing it here with my own staff, you know, doing it out on the football field one day or something like that. But, you know, one of those things, you just get too busy. You don't put it all together. So, but that's cool.
They really get into it. We have a traveling trophy for it. So they're able to get it engraved, and that's going to be there for a while. So they get really, really excited about it. So
we'll show the trophy each year, your school and the past winners and things like that. Your name's engraved, and then we'll take it back this year in order to see if we're going to win it again or if somebody else is going to dethrone.
And then another thing that I really like about NTATS and going there is the students are able to kind of learn to network and talk to each other. I've noticed that over the years, just with cell phones and everything, kids just don't know how to have a conversation unless it's through texting or kicking or whatever you want to call. So they're able to talk to actual people. And then they also have a huge college and university type where each college or university will have a table set up to where they kind of talk about what their program has, the expectations, the scores that they need to have to get in. So it's kind of eye-opening for my freshmen and sophomores that, you know, this is something that you can actually go to school for. For my juniors and seniors, this is something that I can actually get a scholarship for, or you know, go to the next level to do.
Yeah, I apologize. I might over embellish on that number a little bit. It's more like 750 last year in attendance. Just trying to make it sound better, I guess.
That's right.
Yeah, Jeremy's young, and he wanted to do this whole sports medicine broadcast via text, and I told him it wasn't going to work. So, you know.
Yeah, no.
I didn't text that fast. No way.
Me either. I was actually on the very back end of texting. I mean, lots of people, my kids are like, you don't text. I'm like, nope. It cost me 10 cents to text, so. So. All right, so what I'm going to ask is, Bubba, I'll ask you, and then I'll ask you guys there in DeSoto. What's your takeaway from today? And then while you're thinking about that, I'm going to read some of the listener feedback. So in just a second, I'm going to come back to that. But think about your takeaway from today. So we'll close it out.
I start, you said?
You will in just a second, but I'm going to read something first. So I'm going to give you a second to think. All right, so Mitch Russell from Knoxville, Tennessee. I think last week he commented on the show notes, and he had typed in mate or something, and I said, are you from Australia? And he's like, no, I'm Tennessee, dude. But anyways, he said he joined the broadcast on the afternoon regarding social media and the female athlete, and he really enjoyed the experience. So I think it's great you all have these opportunities. And then I think his coworker, I think they work together, both in Tennessee, Katie Rosa, that's the one, she made a comment earlier. She said she really enjoyed the episode because her master's thesis was on body image and social physique, anxiety in female track and field athletes. So it was right up her alley. And so again, thank you guys for listening in and leaving feedback, because it really encourages me, because actually when I was talking to David or emailing back and forth with David, I was kind of like, this may be the end of the broadcast. You know, I'm just kind of getting tired of it. There's no feedback. There's no response. Everybody that comes into the classroom, you know, from the medical professionals, I've received a lot of good feedback. Almost everybody that I ask is, yeah, I can come on, or I can make some time or something. But if I'm just wanting them to come in and talk to my students, then I would just completely change it and just say, okay, we'll come in and talk to my students. But if I'm doing all the broadcasts and all this other work, producing and, you know, improving and all that stuff, then I'd really want some feedback from athletic trainers. And so it was just about that time when David emailed me, and then like 4 or 5 or 6 other people emailed or messaged me and said, hey, thanks for listening. And so it's really good. Thank you, David, for just taking that step out and encouraging me. But it just makes a big difference when people give some feedback or interact in some way. So, all right. So we're going to go with big takeaway from today. Bubba, we'll start with you.
It's been said in several different ways, several times today, but the more tools you have, the better. There's no one set test or evaluation that's going to give you all the information you need, and we've got to keep growing as a profession and getting better.
All right. So who's going to start there?
I'll be back kind of on what Bubba said and get that in so they can't take my answer. The same thing. There's no one set end-all be-all that's going to work for every person. And with that comes knowing your athletes and knowing their personalities and all of those things, and using every tool that you have is going to be the key. It doesn't have to be an expensive tool. It's just using your intuition and your knowledge and that data in order to make the best decision for the athlete.
The biggest thing that I've taken from this is for all those newbies out there, you know, inside of 5 years, I don't want you guys to think that you have to go along to get along, in the sense of this is what I want to do, and you might get a kickback from the administration or the teacher or the coach. The biggest thing that you're going to want to do is to communicate that you're trying to do what's best for that athlete, be it concussion, be it ACL, be it whatever is going on. The biggest thing that I've taken from this is how important communicating is with all personnel that's set around you.
I would say that public education is one of the biggest things I'm taking away from this conversation, because the awareness, it still has a long way to go as far as being out there and people understanding the real ramifications of an injury like this and understanding the proper care and taking care of it now instead of just writing it off as something small. I mean, you know, you've come a long way from, you know, getting their bell rung to understanding that every injury requires proper care for that injury to not reoccur or have long-term effects. So I think not just educating the coaches, the parents, but even the area physicians, so on and so forth, I think the education has to continue to branch out, and understanding has to be met so that we don't end up with issues like we're having with the NFL right now. I mean, we're not having issues with colleges that are going on right now and at the high school level as well. And hopefully we can really get this thing properly taken care of.
For me, it's kind of picking back up what these guys are saying. It's all about standard of care. You always want to do the best that you can for your athletes. So you always want to make sure that you're pushing and raising the standard of care. So you need to reach out to anybody that's willing to allow you to do research or to your administration to see what new tools you can get in. The worst thing they're going to do is say no. It doesn't hurt to ask. And that's how you're always pushing forward, and you're never staying the same. If you're staying the same, you actually don't ever stay the same. You're either getting better or you're getting worse. So you're always pushing forward to make yourself better.
Right. And they may say no now, but 6 months from now, they may say yes, and say yes bigger than what you asked for. Yes. As long as you're doing what you set out you were going to do.
Right. So, and then that's where my coworker comes in. Usually I have all these ideas, and Bill's the one that does all the work. So, well, I say I create everything, and then he keeps it running, you know. So it's like keeping track of our points, because we're going to take our kids on a field trip and to go camping. And so keeping track of points all year long, who's been here, who's not. Well, I came up with the idea. I created it. But then I'm like, oh, yeah. Why don't you go ahead and keep checking all that for me? So
you're the idea guy. He's the facilitator.
Are you going real tent camping, or are you going in cabins?
No, like real tent camping.
Wow.
Yeah. Hopefully there's like one power outlet, and, you know, so the kids can't plug in their phones. But so, yeah. So it should be exciting. They're excited. We're going with another school. So
I would rent that power outlet to them for a set period of time.
Right.
You could bank.
We should. So, all right. I'm going to go ahead and close it out here. So GHATS, Greater Houston Athletic Training Society, as we mentioned them briefly, they're the ones that make the CEU opportunities available for those people that log in. My boy, Robbie McFarlane, he's a Third Coast Sounds. He's been working on taking the videos from the previous month and kind of making highlights so we can promote that on YouTube there. So I know, David, you had asked about shorter videos or playing part of it. So that's kind of what he's working on, is taking some of the videos and chopping up some parts that he found to be really interesting or helpful. And so maybe whenever he finishes that, it'll be something that can fit inside of your class period, and, you know, we'll go from there. So thanks, Robbie, and on Twitter he's Third Coast Sounds. You can check him out there. He does live DJ and stuff, and at our GHATS event, it's a huge help, because he's there in the big group session. So when we're eating lunch, you know, he's playing music and getting the kids hype, and, you know, if there's any time where it's stalled, then he's there, and then that helps out a lot. So if that helps you guys out there at NTATS, then cool. You know, if not, then it's cool. It's whatever. So anyways, I am Jeremy Jackson with the Sports Medicine Broadcast. That's the website, is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Almost every single Wednesday we're live. You can join the conversation there where it says CEU live event, or you can just watch live on the homepage, and you can tweet to me and text and email me, stuff like that. Sports Medicine Broadcast on Google Plus. I think it's Sports Medicine Broadcast 2 because there's a problem with the page 1. Facebook or any of the other stuff. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com has all the links. So for Jeremy Jackson, the Sports Medicine 1 class here that has left a little while ago.
Mama.
And then up there at DeSoto, you guys say goodbye.
Bye. Thank you so much for letting us be a part.
Keep up the good work, man.
All right, thanks, and we'll be in touch.
We'll see you at SWATA.